Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 794. It's the 7th of June 2017. On the podcast today, I have Tony O'Reilly, CEO of Providence Resources, that's PVR ticker, and Tony discusses the two significant pieces of news they released today regarding the farm-ins on two of their prospects with the companies Total and Khan Energy. Also on the podcast, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Georgian Mining Corporation and Ortak Resources at OTC. Plus, Bonnie Hughes, mining specialist at Northland Capital Partners, talks about Ascent Resources. I also have on financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about AutoTrader, Flybe, and Boohoo. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours. And for the first time ever, there's only three companies involved in the top five most liked RNSs. Yeah. Exciting, eh?
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony O'Reilly, CEO of Providence Resources. That's PVR ticker. Tony, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Two bits of big, significant news out today, which looks like investors are welcoming. We'll get to that in a bit, and there's a lot of detail in there. But before we do, Tony, could you give a brief summary as to what Providence Resources is all about, please?
Yeah, we're an Irish-based E&P player. Our modus operandi is to basically license acreage offshore Ireland, work it up, acquire seismic, do all the various things, and move to the drilling phase, and bring in co-venture partners to turn the drill bit, whether it's exploration activities or indeed appraisal activities on existing discoveries. And so our whole rationale is to try and make sure that we have a portfolio of assets offshore Ireland that will lead to substantial increase in shareholder value.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you released two RNSs out today, both quite significant. Let's deal with in timeline wise, chronologically, probably the most important, because you've got the drill coming up now, end of this month still, and this is on Druid and Drombeg, and you've announced a sort of update here. Can you take us through the detail of this, please, Tony?
Okay, well, again, just we're drilling an exploration well called Druid Drombeg at the end of June, beginning of July. It's been much talked about in the market. It's a very high-impact well, over two targets, cumulatively 5 billion barrels prospective resources. So a very big target for any company, let alone one the size of Providence. We basically, we're moving forward drilling it ourselves with our partner Cecina. And then in March, we successfully brought in Cairn Energy, who farmed in for a 30% working interest and paying 45% of the well costs up to a cap of $42 million. This morning's announcement builds on the success of the Cairn farm-in, where we announced that we'd entered an exclusive option with Total, the French supermajor, who will have the option to take a 35% interest in the Druid Drombeg well by way of farm-in. Such farm-in can only be, option can only be exercised after the well has been drilled. But importantly, in securing the option, Total are making a payment to Providence and Cecina of $27 million. So it's not a contingent payment. The money will be paid to us. The first 20.2 million will be payable in the next 10 business days. And then the balance of 6.75 million will be payable 3 days after the issuance of the P&A notice for the 536A well, which is the well that we'll be drilling. So what it has done is basically provided a methodology where we're through the Cairn farm-in, and now the capital that we're getting from Total, our cost exposure for the well is essentially zero. In fact, on the numbers that we look at using the gross well costs, that we actually would have about a $5 million surplus. So it's a hugely important capital injection into our business. It's not conditional. It's not contingent on anything. And obviously, we still end up, you know, with a 28% stake in Druid Drumbeg in the event that Total exercise the option once the well is finished.
Yeah. This is must be the sort of ideal scenario for you, isn't it?
It is. And again, it's what we've always said. It's about trying to bring partners in to co-venture with us, either at the asset level or financially in our portfolio offshore island. I mean, this is a further validation of all our assets in the Porcupine Basin. I mean, again, it's going back in history. First, we obviously had our collaboration project with Schlumberger last year, which really kind of helped us identify for the market the significant scale and potential of Druid Drumbeg. Then that was further validated by the Cairn farm in March. And now we have Total. So, you know, it shouldn't be overlooked that this is a super major coming into Ireland for the first time. It's their first time in Ireland. So that's a huge validation of the assets in the Porcupine. And of course, we have a number of other assets in the Porcupine, and we have other substantial partners, the likes of Eni and Repsol. So I think we're being consistent with our strategy, which is to basically promote a region, identify assets, bring in third-party co-venture partners to help us move it along, and that's what this deal has done.
Yeah, I mean, people just have to go to your website to see how many licenses you have in there. Are you the biggest holder of licenses in that area?
We're not the biggest in terms of spatial areas. I think Exxon Mobil and Statoil co-jointly are the biggest acreage holders now off the West Coast. But we certainly have what we would think is the most attractive portfolio. And really, that's because we went out there. We had the first mover advantage. We moved out there in 2004 before everybody else. So our team were able to identify the opportunities that they wanted to go after. We've acquired the 3D. We've worked them up, and now obviously we're turning the drill bit. So we're very much ahead of the rest of the industry. I mean, it is very encouraging. I mean, the arrival of Total on the back of Cairn. But again, there's as last year's licensing round showed, Ireland is now a very hot exploration area. So you have ExxonMobil, Statoil, CNOOC, Eni, BP, Repsol, Cairn, Woodside. So you've got some major players now who are coming into Ireland. And I'd encourage anyone to go and look on our website at our AGM presentation, because there's a couple of good charts which show the evolution of licenses offshore Ireland, where once we stood alone in 2004, and now we are surrounded by the industry as well as partnering with the industry.
Yeah, well, I wrote a blog post about that, saying, you know, at one point there was no interest there apart from you guys who were, you know, ahead of the curve there, and now all of a sudden the majors are coming in thinking, oh, hang on, these guys are ahead of the curve. So it's nice. So let's go to the next bit of news regarding the Avalon sort of exploration prospect. What's happening there, please, Tony?
Okay, so Avalon is a licensing option that is adjacent to our Dunquin license, and it is really quite close also to Druid Drumbeg. We describe it as a Druid lookalike, but potentially spatially larger. And what we announced this morning were two commercial transactions. The first was that Total will farm in for a 50% working interest and assume operatorship and pay all the costs, or their pro rata costs, plus a promote on the work program. Plus, if there is a well drilled, they would pay a 1.2-to-1 promote on the drilling of an exploration well. So that was the first commercial deal on Avalon. Mm-hmm. The second deal was that Cairn Energy have secured an option to come in for 20% of Avalon. Again, it's an option. They have the right to declare it after we finish our Druid Drumbeg well. But if they do come in, it would be on the same terms as the Total farm-in. So, you know, paying for the work program, but also a contingent well carry. So what you're seeing is, you know, a clearly funded a plan of activity with contingent well on Avalon being announced this morning through our two commercial deals with Total and Cairn on Avalon.
Yeah, and the conversation you're having with these bigger partners here, must extend across. Obviously, you can't say anything here, but I'm sure it's not exclusive to these prospects, is it?
No, I mean, I obviously can't say specifically the commercial things, but there's a lot of interest now in offshore Ireland, and yeah, so I think that we're encouraged by the level of interest that is being shown by these players. But you know, again, the key point is they're not just talking; they're doing. And that's obviously very positive for Providence shareholders, because obviously the net point about all this is, you know, we do these transactions and we still keep the cash on our balance sheet. So, you know, we had 31.4 million euros at the end of financial year 2016. We really have, through these farm-out transactions, mitigated any cost outflow from our business, because obviously we've got the Cairn farm in, and we've got the Total option payments to us. And that means that, you know, our cash resources will stay secure. So, you know, in terms of people saying, well, you know, here we are going out and drilling a wildcat, and if it didn't work out, we wouldn't have any money. I think they're going to, every shareholder is going to have to suddenly go back and question that statement, because we will have a lot of cash on our balance sheet. And that opens up very interesting opportunities for us in terms of how we might deploy that capital on our portfolio, because obviously the market is aware we have our big asset Barry Roe in the Celtic Sea. We have opportunities like Newgrange in the Goban Spur. So, you know, I think there is, you know, having cash on our balance sheet post this well, significant amounts of cash, puts us in a very strong commercial position going forward.
Yeah, significantly de-risked this. And talking about the drill, it's still end of June. And when will you know what kind of date, a specific date or day you're doing this drill on, Tony?
Again, you know, we it's part of the process for the consent process, so which is ongoing. So I can't give an absolute specific date on the day, but I certainly can say that we're working towards the end of June target for spudding. And we're ready to go operationally. So all we now need are the bits of paper, the consents and everything. And that's pretty standard anywhere in the world, that, you know, you do all these things to get ready to drill, but you still require the requisite government approvals and all that sort of stuff. And so we're moving along very nicely with those.
Yeah, it's getting exciting here. Okay, Tony, if anyone's not following you, but they're listening to this and think, I should be following this company, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, I think after today's announcement, I think you say this is a company that is very financially secure with a lot of cash on its balance sheet and limited cost exposure going forward. Second point is that we're drilling one of the biggest high impact wells ever offshore Ireland, and certainly probably one of the biggest wells off Northwest Europe in many years. Again, targeting 5 billion barrels potential prospective resources on two structures, Druid and Drumbeg. So obviously it is a very attractive prize to go after. And now we have the validation of some major players like Cairn and Total who are coming in with us. And then the third point is what we've always maintained is that it was a requirement for an E&P company like ourselves is to have that extensive portfolio. So this company does have that. We've got an extensive portfolio in the Celtic Sea and in the Porcupine Basin, and we're now moving forward on all of them.
Tony, good to chat to you. Well, like I said, it's a busy period for you, so hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, you're right.
Yes, good morning. It's going quite well here.
Yes. Well, listen, we were just chatting then, pre-chat, before I hit the record there. And you mentioned you were a bit dumbfounded by the little sell-off in Georgian mining yesterday, because they released, drilling results in the Gold Zone 2, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, and I think these are results that perhaps aren't so easy for the uninitiated to understand. So the gold results were a bit better than we would have expected. They show that there is a reasonable amount of gold at the site. It confirms there is copper underneath that gold blanket. That gold will be moved over to the Manuli mine for heap leach processing. And I think that The company will be able to make some money out of that late this year, and will be able to move its plans forward to actually start copper mining from slightly underneath that relatively quickly.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe it's an opportunity for people to buy the dip yesterday. So there we go. Obviously, do your own research. It's not investment advice. We're just saying, you know, there's information for you.
I think whoever was selling that yesterday will regret it.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, maybe so. It's because you think it's still got a good sort of future ahead of it, do you?
Yes, I think so. I think that's one to buy and hold, not to necessarily trade too much right now.
Okay. All right. Like I said, do your own research, everyone. And what else are you looking at, John?
Ortac Resources today. They announced yesterday a management restructuring. Nick von Schoending, who came out of Anglo some years ago and really made his name working alongside Nat Rothschild at Valor, and he was the man in there cleaning up some of the mess. And Nick is taking over as chairman. He's stepping up. They're refocusing the business. They are increasing their stake in Zamsort, which is a Zambian copper mine and exploration opportunity, to just under 20%, and I'm sure they'll look to move that forwards going ahead. They're also focusing on a gold asset in the DRC with Casa Mining, so they're taking their stake there up to 45%, and I think that's going to be an important focus for the company. New money in there, new drilling going on, and then they're trying to sort out the sort of stalemate at the gold project in Slovakia, where they're taking on a joint venture partner. So there's quite a lot going on there, and yeah. I think there is value to be realised going forwards.
Yeah, because at the moment they are looking about a 4.28 million market cap, so you know, a micro cap there. But so they have those three interests there. Is that right?
Well, they've got a fourth one in Eritrea, but I don't think we'll go into that right now. So,
okay.
So there's quite a lot happening. I think the new focus is really going to be on these projects in Africa. The most exciting of those is the copper opportunity in Zambia, and Zambia is a good place for mining. It's a good place for copper. They just need to work their way into a bit more of that. And of course, there's this project in the Congo, the DRC. Which has had a lot of money spent on it in the past. Denham Capital were in there. I think they spent about $16 million on their part of the exploration. Denham walked away. They're focusing on another project in the Congo, the Alpha Min Tin project, which is interesting and very good. And that leaves the way open, or has left the way open, for Ortac to get in there with a relatively modest amount of money, just a couple of million dollars, committed to take the stake up to 45% and to push that forward. So I think going forwards, Ortac is going to be about the DRC and Zambia. And I see good things coming in from there. And certainly with a market cap of just over 4 million quid, that's looking pretty undervalued to me.
Yeah, and on the 2nd of May, they raised 2 million at 3p. And right now you can buy at that price. So to do that, to further investment in the Casa Mining. So it's almost like you are buying here at wholesale prices if you've done your research. So it's not like it's you know, rallied strongly, is it, really?
No, I think, you know, the market has yet to grab the story and run with it. And I think this is a company which is going to create new value going forwards. It's just, we can't say that there's a big discovery here right now, but I would say that if they start drilling the Zamsort asset, there'll be good news to come. And I think there's more value to come out of the DRC, although it's always a slightly tricky area from an investment perspective. But there are companies doing quite well out there. Randgold, Glencore, and others who've built mines and done very well.
Marvellous. Okay, so that's Ortac Resources, and the ticker there is OTC. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. So I've seen a couple of people mention it, you know, on social media, but like I said, did a bit of research, but I didn't get very far, just time constraints, really. So it's nice to get an overview there. John, thanks very much, and hopefully speak next week.
You're very welcome. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bonnie Hughes, mining specialist at Northland Capital Partners. Bonnie, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you very much, Justin. It's great to be back. And today I'm going to talk about Ascent Resources, because you know they came out with news yesterday.
Yeah, I love the enthusiasm in your voice, Bonnie. It says to me, you love your job. Do you?
Well, I do, but you know, you have your days, ups and downs. That's just like the stock market, right?
Okay, in that case, then you're just faking it. Good. All right, that's fine. Now, listen, Bonnie, let's go for it. Ascent Resources, yes, I know them very well. Colin has been on the podcast several times. They are one of the most followed companies on Vox Markets, you know, a very loyal set of followers, and Colin's a lovely guy. So, yes, they had an operational update, I think, didn't they, yesterday? So let's just, let's cover that then. What happened?
Well, let's just say, well, they're expected to complete the well PG-11A and then to be connected to the pipeline to supply gas to ENA. But what I want to compare it to the company is basically Georgia Mining on a sentiment basis. Obviously, this is gas. Georgia Mining is copper gold. But basically what's happened with Ascent Resources is that in the past they had they didn't meet expectations. Mm-hmm. And therefore, obviously, they got hurt for that, which it wasn't entirely all of management's fault. But now that Colin's in there, he's sort of making things a lot better. And so what happened with Georgia Mining is, again, they had some sort of, you know, they didn't meet expectations. And so when they started coming out with some good drill results, the market still ignored them until they kept going. So I think with Ascent, the fact that they're going to be supplying gas and actually getting cash flow and revenues starting in June, I think the market is still not quite giving them all of the benefit that they could achieve just because of what's happened to them in the past.
Yeah. So you think there's a potential here. And as yet, though, we don't know how much they'll be selling off or how much, do we?
Well, not exactly, but I mean, our analyst put out, you know, a report on them, and he basically is looking at revenue of about $3.3 million for this year, based on a conservative estimate of how much gas they could potentially be selling there. And they do have some sort of idea based on what the previous flows were from the wells in the past.
Yeah. And do you know what? Colin's been on several times. And this selling to ENA is just one of the many routes to market, isn't it, they have, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of it actually worked out in their favor that the they didn't get the permitting for the plant because he had to look for an alternative way to start generating revenue. Mm-hmm. And selling to ENA, which is the basically Croatian-owned gas, is was something that that developed because of that, and it's actually worked out quite well for him. And then the issue with getting the permit in order to build the plant so that they can basically do production rate on their own field instead of selling the gas to ENA at a discount because it's untreated gas, is just been a bit of a pain in their side because it's just a individual who just is causing some trouble, even though the government has already approved it. But based on how the laws are in Slovakia, they have to, you know, basically go through this process. So this will be the very last time that that person or that individual can dispute them being granted the license. So once that's done, about a year after the license is finished, they will basically have their own plant, which is then going to increase their revenues quite dramatically. And our analysts sort of said once that they're treating their own gas from their project, the profit could be about $6.2 million for the first year. That's profit.
Yeah, that's good. So if you look at that as a, you know, even a market cap, they are about $33.5 million. So, so if you put that profit, $6 million times 10, P of 10, they could do at least double where they are here, really. That's a very crude, simplistic version. But, I mean, yeah, I can see the potential there. Excellent. Yeah, that, you know, Colin's talked about this person who keeps filing these objections with the court. And it's so annoying because the court keep knocking him back. And they think, well, surely at the end of the day, they must realise this person's an imbecile in some way, that he keeps doing this over and over again, and it's holding back progress for people in the country, you know, for jobs, for revenue, everything, and he hasn't got, you know, sort of appropriate objections either. It's almost like a stone in your shoe. You know, you're walking along, you find a little stone in your shoe, and you take your shoe off, you have a look, you can't find the stone, and you think you've got it out, and you put it back on, you keep walking, you think it's there again. Where is that stone? And it's something in your shoe that's irritating you, and you can't find it, you know? It's like that, but eventually, like you said, this will be the last time their objection, they'll take up the objection seriously. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And I mean, the good thing is that Colin's been so patient, and he's been able to sort of find ways around this individual by selling the gas to Croatia. So that was quite a good move on his part in order to say, okay, we can't do this right now. What's my alternative? And so that is just something that's really good to see in a CEO, that you don't get set back by something like that, and you find an alternative and a way around it.
Yeah, you know what? Colin is very calm, and if, you know, a couple of times he's come on the podcast, and if I was him in his position, I'm sure I'd have given a few expletives now and again, because that person is really annoying. But he's very calm, just looks for solutions, and like you said, that's a good sign of a CEO. That's why I'll never be a CEO, because I haven't got the temperament to deal with people like that. Okay, marvellous. Well, Bonicorn, anything else?
Oh, no, I was just going to say you wouldn't be a CEO because you have such a great voice that it sounds much better to hear you on a podcast.
Thank you, Bonnie. And you can come on next week as well. Right, that's great stuff. Bonnie, thanks for that, and have a nice week. We'll speak next week.
Great, thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. You're right, Connor?
Very good, thank you. You?
Yeah, I'm all right. Not too bad. I had a dodgy patch at the start of the week. Literally, I had chronic stomach cramps, which I don't know what happened. Nice. Took me out there a little bit. But I'm recovering. I'm surviving. But listen, I don't like to go on about it. It's awful. You are someone, how they are. They actually tell you. You know, you don't want that, really, do you? You just want, fine, thanks. Anyway, Connor, what are we looking at? What stocks are reporting this week?
Well, first up, we've got Auto Trader on Thursday. It's sort of struggled for momentum this year, but in the last week, or I'd say in the last few days, it's begun to rise. It got an overweight rating from Barclays the other day, and that sent it shooted up to its sort of best levels in a few months. It's been doing well, you know, figures wise. Its half year figures last November, revenue rose 11%, underlying operating profit was up 23%, and crucially, the company had said they'd felt no discernible change in the competitive environment and no noticeable impact from Brexit. Full year figures on Thursday. It's the first update they've had since last November, so it's got quite a lot to cover beyond, you know, the headline figures. In terms of those headline figures, again, meant to be solid like they were in the half year, 10.5% jump in revenue to 311 million, nearly 21% rise in basic earnings per share to 15.5p. I think the reaction is going to be more centred around the outlook for the rest of the year, though, given that there hasn't been a lot of news or statements or anything from Auto Trader. I think that the main issue is going to be, is the car market slowing down somewhat? In April, new car sales fell 18%. In May, they fell 8%. Is that going to continue? Is that just a blip? How will Brexit impact its performance going ahead? You know, if people's wallets are increasingly tight, and then big marquee purchases like a car, I think they are going to suffer. And I was reading that when new car sales go down, so do secondhand car sales as well. So there is a correlation between the two that Auto Trader might have to deal with in the second half of the year. However, I think, you know, our clients have been buying it around sort of the 430 mark. Looking at, you know, it's so far its figures are good, and there's no reason for them to change at the moment. However, if it is overly negative on Thursday, then that could all change.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? They are a market leader. And I like them to right move a little bit. When they first listed, I got in there, and I don't know why, I sold quite early, and I've been sort of kicking myself. But I mean, you know, they are highly rated. The PE is very high. You know, it's above 13. They don't pay much of a dividend. But it's one of those growth stories that I think you have to overly pay for, because, like I said, it's a market leader, and there are a few competitors around. But let's be honest, it is the one out there that everyone knows and goes to first, first choice of call. People go to Auto Trader, don't they? And everyone knows it. So you have to pay that premium, I suppose, from being a market leader. All right, what else are you looking at, Connor?
Fireby, they also report on Thursday. Fireby's had a pretty awful year, to be honest. If things were looking up in February, or at the end of January, start of February, things were looking up. It's sort of, back in November, it had posted a 25% plunge in its half-year profit. You know, awful figures. But then in January, passenger revenue for the third quarter rose 13.5%, and that's compared to the 5.5% it managed in the first half of the year. It also said that it managed to slow the expansion of its fleet to 12.5%, which that sounds like an odd thing to be cheering, but one of Flybe's key issues at the moment is that it just has too many planes, basically, and it can't find enough profitable routes, so it's got a lot of aircraft sitting on the tarmac. So yeah. Any news that is slowing its expansion, I think it perhaps overstretched itself in the last couple of years, has been greeted as good news by investors. However, then in March, its next update, it's sort of any of that goodwill was gone. It said that the final quarter of the year had been characterized by weak demand in an uncertain consumer sector. Passenger revenue had slowed from that 13.5% in the third quarter to 9.8% in the fourth quarter. And then it sort of threw everything in the kitchen sink at reasons why it was going to post a small adjusted pre-tax loss this year. It complained about an airline price war, sharp and price activity from rail operators, adverse weather conditions and industrial action all combining to put it in the red, basically, for the end of the year. I think the size of that pre-tax loss is going to dictate how investors react on Thursday. I think for revenue is expected to be fine, expected to jump 10% to just over 687 million. But like I said, the size of the pre-tax loss is going to be key. Even if it's only a few million, and if it can update, if it can issue a positive update on its summer season and say things are looking up, and that there are signs in the first quarter that passenger revenue is holding around that 10% mark, then it could lift away from its current lows. You know, it's what, 35p or something? It's fallen a lot in the last year and in the last few years, really. So it is... I don't think it's going to take a lot of good news to cause investors to maybe think, you know, it's pretty cheap at the moment. Perhaps we'll have a punt and see what it does in the second half of the year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember them sort of championing new routes a while back and thinking, well, it's all good announcing all these new routes, but there's got to be demand for them, you know, and regular demand.
Yeah.
And now they're going to... And it's never a good sign when you fire your CFO or you step down, you know, they say you step down, but April... So April 18th, you stepped down the CFO. That's never a good sign, is it, when you come to financially the results just before they announce them, the CFO steps down. So that's always a bit of a red flag, I think. But we'll see. Like I said, they have, you know, hit this level before. And they are now trading just below or they're in a previous... Where it bounced before, which is around about this 30, sort of 31 pence. They may bounce here. You never know. So they're oversold on the chart and the RSI. So we'll see what the results. Maybe like as always, you know, it's all priced in already. The bad news is all priced in, and maybe, you know, a bit of relief.
Yeah, I think they sort of did that job in March. Really, they put out all the negative, all the reasons why, and they warned people that there was going to be an adjusted loss without giving a firm figure, which does give them some wiggle room, really, on Thursday to perhaps post a welcome surprise.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay, all right. And anything else there?
Yeah, Boohoo. Boohoo's the final one, also reporting on Thursday. Boohoo couldn't be more different to something like Flybe. It's just, you know, it's got a rocket strapped to its back, basically. It's just kept climbing this year. I think it's up
60%. Wow, look at that. Yeah,
60% this year. The chart is sort of a dream chart, really. Yeah. But then you look at their full-year figures back from the end of April, and you can sort of see why. Total sales, they rose 51% to 294.6 million. Pre-tax profits surged 97% to just shy of 31 million. And in the US was where they found a lot of the fuel for a lot of this growth. Sales had jumped 140%, which is huge in America. That's amazing for a company that's still listed on the AIM market. It's got its first quarter update on Thursday. I think sales are expected to rise another 35%. Analysts at Peel Hunt said that it might use the update to warn of tough comparatives in the second half, perhaps to just manage investor expectations basically for the second half of the year and make sure people don't get too ahead of themselves. But I think it's still on track to hit 50% sales growth by the end of the year, which means it would be on track for £1 billion in turnover by 2020, which for what was a small company is pretty impressive. And our clients, they're still buying around that 220 mark, even if it does see a dip on Thursday with a bit of profit taking or people perhaps not pleased if it does highlight those tough comparatives. I think long term our clients are on board with Boohoo, basically.
Yeah, I've had a couple of people who I've seen on social media who bought Boohoo at quite a decent level, actually. I'm talking, you know, around about the sort of 80, sort of between 60 and 80 pence mark. And yeah, it sort of sold out. And so they didn't know this. Even then, they sold about, I think they doubled their money pretty much. But, it's kept rising. It's defying gravity. And you're thinking, wow, when is this going to top out? Because a couple of times on the chart, it's looked like it's been on oversold on the RSI indicator a couple of times. But that hasn't stopped it. It had a tiny pullback and then shot back up again. So yeah, it's almost like when you get momentum, isn't it? When you get momentum, people start piling in. More people talk about it, more people pile in, and it defies sort of gravity, doesn't it? You know?
I think, yeah, it's also both ASOS and Boohoo, they get the sort of good rub off of each other, really. Yeah. When one does well, the other seems to do well. I think they're both seen as at the forefront of sort of like, not an online clothing revolution, because they're, you know, online clothing sales have been around for a while. But I just think if you're looking to get into the retail sector, they're far preferable to things like Next and M&S, basically. Yeah, just because they don't come with the sort of the baggage that those stocks come with.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Connor, thanks for that. And we'll speak next week, fella.
See you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, 88 Energy. At 4, Asia Met Resources. That's ARS, of course, ticker. At 3, Ascent Resources. Bonnie Hughes just talked about it on the podcast there, AST. At 2, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. They featured quite a few times recently, ADL, in the top 5. And number 1, big rise yesterday, Clontarf Energy, that's CLON. All right, and here are the top 5 most liked RNSs. Only 3 companies involved here. At 5, Berkeley Energia, that's BKY, former senior Rio Tinto executive appointed. At 4, Providence Resources, commercial update on licensing the option of 1624 South Porcupine Basin. At 3, Audio Boom, independently commissioned research. At 2, again, Providence Resources, PVR, commercial update on Frontier Exploration License 214, exclusive option. And number 1, most liked RNS, was from Audio Boom, again, second quarter update from them. And something, revenue was up. From the last quarter, the first quarter of last year, this year, something like 477%, something ridiculous. So revenue is going up there. Okay, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados. Don't forget to get the app. The app is free, but it's priceless.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.